The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
More and more people who are struggling with their mental health are turning to AI chatbots for help, so much so that experts here are calling for a ban on AI being used for therapy. You might remember that last year there was the first case of its kind where bereaved parents sued OpenAI over alleged interactions their son had with ChatGPT. Lorcan Martin is president of the College of Psychiatrists of Ireland, and Lorcan joins me now. Good morning to you, Lorcan.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you very much for joining us. Are you concerned about the level of interaction we're hearing is going on now between people who have are struggling with their mental health and they're seeking advice now from these chatbots? Are you aware that it's on the increase?
It certainly is, and I suppose in answer to your first question, we are very concerned about it. But at the outset, what I would like to say is, you know, we're not against AI, or we're not against the, you know, responsible and legitimate use of artificial intelligence in terms of, you know, signposting people, providing verified apps that might help people record their mood and so on and so forth, and or perhaps in training purposes. The issue we have is this unregulated kind of chatbot stroke AI companion with which people are now involving themselves when they have mental health difficulties. And as you pointed out, there have been a number of tragedies, both in the US and the UK, where people have engaged with this and then have gone on to take their own lives. And thankfully, as far as we know, we haven't had a similar situation in this country. But that's part of the reason we want to, I suppose, maybe raise awareness and you know, do something about it before we are facing that particular tragedy.
Because the AI tool, if I log on to it and tell it how I'm feeling, it's going to learn from what I'm saying, but reflect back to me what I'm saying. So amplifying perhaps the problems that I have rather than solving them in a professional way.
Exactly. And one of the difficulties with AI is that by its very nature, it's designed to keep you engaged. So it reinforces what you're saying. So while it might reflect back, it doesn't reflect back in a constructive or properly therapeutic fashion. So a properly trained therapist, and bear in mind that therapists spend many years in training, you know, they contain the difficulties that people have. They're able to reflect them back in a responsible and structured fashion. The AI doesn't have any of that. The other thing, of course, is that when there's a significant or serious risk, you know, therapists, psychiatrists, etc., have an obligation to report that risk and make sure the individual is protected. The AI doesn't have an ethical or legal responsibility to do any of that, nor does it have the ability to do it. So that's one of the difficulties.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're not, you're not looking for an AI ban or you know, anything to that grand extent. It is the use of AI in this context that you're worried about.
Absolutely. I mean, AI is here with us to stay. So, I mean, there's nothing we can do about that, even if we did want to. But in fact, it has many, you know, positive uses. It can be used in training. It can be used to signpost people to appropriate resources. It can be used for things like, you know, recording mood diaries and providing, you know, meditation stuff and so on. So there's a lot of good can come out of it. The issue we have is this unregulated chatbot stroke AI companion type of thing that is then engaging in kind of a pseudo-therapy. And of course, one of the difficulties is that, you know, if an individual is vulnerable and if you're talking to one of these things about your mental health, the chances are that you are vulnerable, you know, you're not going to have the understanding that this thing hasn't been properly trained. You're not going to have the understanding that it can't reflect back properly, that it can't, you know, report risk. So you'll just plod on, you know, unwittingly. And of course, one of the difficulties is that, you know, it can reinforce suicidal ideation. There have been situations where it's even helped to write suicide notes. And of course, if you've got, you know, significant mental illness where, for example, you might have delusions, where you believe things that aren't true, it won't challenge them. It won't, you know, if there's a risk, it won't report them anywhere appropriate. And in fact, may even feed into the delusions, which can then lead to people harming themselves or somebody else.
The figures are astonishing. The ones I have are from the UK. Mental Health UK, an organisation, did a study on this and found that 64% of 25 to 34 year olds are using chatbots for well-being conversations. Now, when you get to the overall figure, it's 37% of all adults, which is still very high. But I suppose that the greatest concern must be for those who are in that cohort of 25 to 34.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, when they say well-being, I mean, that can be quite legitimate stuff. That could be looking up resources that have been verified, that have been, you know, properly developed by responsible agencies. So, you know, not all well-being AI is necessarily bad. It's that particular narrow band where people are going down rabbit holes of engaging with what, you know, ostensibly they almost feel like are real humans. And of course, one of the most important things in therapy is the actual therapeutic alliance, or sometimes we call it the therapeutic relationship. And that's the dynamic between the individual seeking therapy and the therapist themselves. And it requires human contact. Now, sometimes it is done online, of course. But I mean, you know, it is dealing with a human who has been appropriately and properly trained and is regulated. That is the other thing. Therapists are regulated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really important that people know the difference between chatting to a machine, which really doesn't have your welfare at heart, and chatting to a trained human being who has your welfare there as part of their vocation or their responsibility.
Now, there are some listening to this, Lorcan, who might say, oh, sure, he's concerned about the business model and about the income for therapists and for psychiatrists. Can you address that if there is an accusation here that is your motivation?
Okay, well, I suppose the majority of mental health care in this country is delivered through the health service executive, so there's actually no profit involved in it for the individual therapist. Of course, some therapists operate privately, but that said, they are, you know, they are regulated, but they're also governed by a very strict code of ethics, so it's not about a business model. But as I say, you know, for the vast majority of people accessing mental health care in the country, it is actually done through the public system, so there isn't really that level of impetus in relation to profit.
Mm-hmm. Some are saying, I know as well, and a lot has been written about this. I'm looking at a piece written by Ro McDermott in the Irish Times, where she's saying that some people report using this as a stopgap. So there are people who are in therapy, but there may be times when they can't access care or they can't access their therapist. They're using it as a reflective tool. But she points out that, and you've said this, you know, for vulnerable people, it can begin to look like a relationship. And you start to lose perspective on it. And that is where the trouble begins. And you can easily see how dangerous that could be.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, we've had situations where, you know, people have been encouraged to kill themselves so that they can be together forever with their companion, which of course doesn't exist. It's out there on the internet somewhere. And these are the kind of things. But I mean, if you're vulnerable, you know, unless you've been in that situation, it's very difficult to understand how attractive these things can be. And it's not just younger people, it's people of all ages, because when you're not well or when you're feeling very down or very vulnerable, any avenue can appear appealing. And that's why these things are particularly dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Well, we may be very vulnerable to this in Ireland because of access to therapy.
Absolutely. And I mean, one of the things we've said for a very long time is that there needs to be a much greater investment in the whole area of mental health. I mean, we still hover around about 6% of the health budget, when in fact, you know, Sláintecare, for example, would say it should be 10%. Other countries, it's between 12 and 13%. So there is underinvestment in the health services, and there needs to be greater access to service, and also more speedy access to services, whatever those services happen to be. And it might necessarily be a psychiatrist. It could be a therapist for a particular, you know, type of difficulty or problem. And, you know, I think one of the things is that very often there's an association with mental health and, you know, necessarily meaning psychiatry. There are many people out there who have significant psychological or mental health difficulties who will never need to see a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. But their GP should be able to access the appropriate therapies that they need.
You see, there's no point saying to people, don't do this. You know, you shouldn't do this. Don't do it, because people are doing it. That's what the figures from the UK certainly bear out. So it's about urging caution, Lorcan, would you agree?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, prior to any sort of legislation coming in, I think, you know, an awareness campaign, I think, is really the first step, because that's something that I won't say a quick fix, but it's certainly a positive step that could be done relatively quickly and relatively easily. After that, then, I suppose it's up to the technical people to decide what sort of safeguards can be put on these things in terms of restricting access. And it may be that, you know, that they're able to put algorithms in where, you know, the minute somebody starts discussing certain topics, topics that the thing shuts down or whatever. But as I say, you know, our business is to keep people well. You know, other people would have the technological know-how in terms of managing this thing.
Lorcan, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. Lorcan Martin, President of the College of Psychiatrists of Ireland. And that brings us to the end of the programme. Many thanks for listening. If you missed anything, you can go and have a listen back on the Go Loud app. The team today, Cormac McDonough on sound, producers Helena O'Toole, Dee King and Alex Russo, with research by David O'Connor. Our broadcast assistant is Anne-Marie Kane and the editor is Denise McNamara.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.